And now I'd like to introduce our 45-minute speaker, John W. from the Bay, from Santa Rosa.
I'm John W., and I am an alcoholic, for sure. That was a really cool introduction. I like that. He said the Bay. And the Bay is where I had my spiritual awakening. I'll let you guys know that. So I want to welcome the newcomers. You guys are in the right place. I honestly can tell you that life for me got better and is continuing to get better daily with just a couple of spiritual principles. And learning how to live life and love another person outside of myself. And I usually want to talk about what it was like in a general way. That's what we do here. We talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. So I always start off my shares with telling you guys that, you know, I'm very blessed to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a very fortunate young man who found these rooms under unusual circumstances. I fought. I did not want to come here. When I came to these rooms, I didn't see people that looked like me. That's the honest to God truth. I said, there's none of my homies in here. And like, I couldn't relate, right? I felt like I was like in some cult or something, right? But then it talks about in our big book, right? It talks about that we are people who normally would not mix. So if I took you guys to my hood where I grew up in the ghetto, right, in Marin City, or to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where I was born, and I walked with this whole group right here, right now. Do you know the reaction I would get? And the names I would get called on the way? So I just want to let you guys know that it's a privilege to be amongst you. And it's, you know, you guys don't know it or not. I mean, you guys helped pave this way for me. I'll give you a brief description of what it was like, right? It was scary. And grew up in Louisiana. I was born and raised there in Baton Rouge. I'm one of 12 kids to an alcoholic father. Excuse me, I'm sweating because this gets me emotional talking about this stuff. Being clean and sober, I'm fired up today. But I'm one of 12 kids from an alcoholic mother and father. My father died of this disease. My father took an innocent child with him because of this disease. My little sister was rolled over on and suffocated because my father decided to go to sleep drunk one night. And I, at 8 years old, had to witness that. There was a hurricane in Louisiana, and the windows of my bedroom busted out. And I remember running down the hallway, and I remember as if it were yesterday, seeing a crack in the door like this, and I see my father just shaking his baby, and I was like, whoa. And he just threw her up against the wall, and I'm like, oh, that's crazy. And so I ran back to the room, and I slammed the door, and I told my brothers, I'm like, Dad, you just killed the baby. And I remember this moment like it was yesterday. I froze. Like, I was just like caught, like a deer in the headlights, right? And that moment, I'll tell you, stuck with me for all these years. I didn't want to talk about it. I stuffed that. I barely remember most of my childhood because of that one incident. When we say what traumatic experiences happen to us, we cling on to them. And that was the one thing that I clinged on to. And I blamed everyone. I asked my father. We moved to California in 1986, right after she was killed. And, you know, it got worse from there. I mean, I started going to middle school and hanging out with these kids. I experienced my first stint of racism in third grade. I had a best friend who was white. And his mom decided that she wanted to come and grab his arm when we were playing outside after school. And she was like, we don't hang out with those people. So right away, at that moment, I realized what racism was. And I realized that, damn, dude, this is about to be some crazy stuff. So I started holding resentments against my parents for bringing me into this world black. And sometimes I still hold those resentments. But the book tells us if we do the work, we do what's expected of us, we speak about this honestly, some things can change. And dude, I am so grateful for the two alcoholic black men that paved the way to come into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1945, 11 years after this program was founded by Bill W. He went to a hospital and he saw two African-American men suffering from the disease of alcoholism. And he said, hey, would you guys like to come to a meeting? And they went to that meeting. And Bill W. said, I think you guys should take a group conscious on whether people of color should be allowed in Alcoholics Anonymous. They took that tally and it failed. And Bill W. said, I think you need to do it again. And the next time it passed. And then these are how the traditions were formed for Alcoholics Anonymous. All right? People of color were only able to come to Alcoholics Anonymous as observers of the group. We weren't able to talk. You see, all this history that I know about this is because I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself. I wanted to learn about this fellowship. I wanted my family to see the changes that have transpired in my life. Because when alcohol got in my system, because of the things that I stuffed, I became an abuser to every single woman that came in my path, a master manipulator. I ended up in state prison for 8 years. My mom was beat by a cop and still paralyzed to this day. So you would see why I needed this program. One of the African American men back then said, you know, the same whiskey that gets a white man drunk, it's the same whiskey that gets my people drunk. That was one of the most powerful statements that was ever made in Alcoholics Anonymous. And today it still remains one of the most important statements ever made, because when this program was founded, you know, Bill W. had no idea what he was up against. I mean, this is a man who had everything. And the grips of despair when he was in that hospital, he laid out a spiritual program with the help of a friend and a doctor. And it talks about in this big book how most of us, I know myself, was in the hospital numerous times, kicking this disease and going off on all these doctors. And talks about, a portion of this book talks about how these doctors say, we wish you were on the firing line see the despair in the families, the kids that are uprooted. We're like, and that the alcoholic is like a tornado roaring through the lives of others, turning stuff upside down. And that's how I was. After I hit middle school, I wasn't trying to fit in. I was always that kid that was like outgoing, but I had my own rules set aside. And I was rebelling against my father because it was that one incident that stuck in my brain. Was that I saw what happened when I was younger. And when I would ask, when I hit high school, the abuse started going to my mother, and then it transpired down to the kids. And so here I am, stuffing more wounds. I barely wear shorts today because of the wounds on the back of my legs. When I hit prison, it was a scary place for me. My story is probably something that most of you guys can't relate to. But what I'll tell you, I found something through working these steps. And I can't quite put my hands on it. I wish that every last one of my family members could have what I have now today. And so it was really scary. The relationships that have gotten broken up because of my drinking, other forms of alcohol played a huge part in this role. became familiar with the criminal justice system at a very young age. And today, I can tell you that I'm so proud of the strides that I continue to make through this fellowship. I keep coming back no matter how hard it gets. And I just want to let you guys know, you newcomers, every day I feel like you. And most of the time I just want to give up. But I'll tell you what, I have four sponsors. My first sponsor gave me an opportunity to where I tried to trust him, and I started doing my fourth and fifth step with him. I come back to the rooms and I hear two individuals speaking on what I was sharing in my fourth and fifth step with them. And what that did to me was it broke me. He's since made amends. I still have messages on Facebook of some of these people telling me, like, man, how could he do this? But hey, that's not what we do here. My second sponsor had a baby and said, I can't be available for you right now. And one of the worst times of my life, I relapsed. My third sponsor decided it was a great idea to ask me to harm another individual for him because of a debt that was owed to him. And I don't know if he knew my history. I shared a lot of my criminal history with him, and took it upon himself to ask me to harm another individual, and that was not going to happen. My fourth sponsor is the one that I have today, who is a man who changed my life. He's an attorney in this fellowship. Last year in November 20th, I went to court, I think it was, and even though I'm clean and sober, I had something that came back to bite me in the butt from 6 years ago. And I was facing 12 years in prison because I had been in prison before. You know, I took ownership of this thing, I did it. But the thing is I used my brother's name. When I got pulled over by a cop, I was drunk. I got pulled over by a cop and I was, you know, I had drugs on me. I had my kids in the car. This guy helped me clear that up. And today, I continue to clear things up with him. This fellowship I'm in debt, forever in debt to. Very emotional right now because of the things that have transpired in my life in very such little time. But it's allowing me to share my truth, especially with a newcomer, because when I had those slips, man, I felt like if I were to come back to these rooms, my ego was so damn big to where I thought people would reject me, laugh at me. But I'll tell you what, I just did my fourth and fifth step over. I took a chance recently. I put my foot out on a ledge with this man who helped me clear up my life. And I didn't expect what happened. Before I did my fifth step with him, I was at home. My beautiful fiance is right here in the front row. I was at home in my guest bedroom, and what I did was I wrote down this last bit of my fourth step. And at the very end of that, I wrote that last secret that I wanted no one to know about. I wrote it down, I wrote a whole page. And then I ripped it up, tossed it in the trash can. And I told myself, I'm not sharing that. I'm gonna go to the grave with that. When I got to my sponsor's house, he told me, you know, there's there's a little oath we take here, and you have to 100% trust the person that you're going to be working with here. And so, in the big book, it says, on page 72, it says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects, and now we have, in a rough way, trouble to put our finger on this, and the weak item that's in our inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program it talks about. And then it goes along to say how this is the most important step in this book. If we do not do this step, we're going to drink again. If we do not do eternal house cleaning, we will drink again. And I found myself with that. And literally within a couple hours, I was back in the hospital. The disease picked up right where it left off. Talks about the alcoholic leading a double life and like having the lights, you know, we wanted to arrange the stage. We wanted to be put on a certain mask so that no one could see us. Well, I did all that. I continued to do all that, even while I was clean and sober. Because things got well, I wanted my family and friends to see me as this cool dude that knew everything throughout all its nonsense, right? That's what it was like. So, for some reason, I get to my sponsor's house and I started opening up to him and I started sharing this fifth step and I started taking up. Something started happening. I don't know what it was, but I wasn't going to share what I had ripped up and threw in the garbage can. That was not going to happen. Man, I remember I started sweating like I am now. All of a sudden, it came out. And I don't know how it came out. Maybe it was God doing for me what I can't do for myself, what the book talks about. But it said, relying on a power greater than ourselves. When I took that third step, and I wholeheartedly took that third step, I'm no longer in charge of my life. My higher power had my back in that moment. That third step is vital. The tears that I shed on that couch, and I looked over at my sponsor, and I saw him crying, and I was like, whoa. And I just wanted to let you guys know that this really works. Because I was trying to get out of every intention of coming here tonight. I kept telling my sponsor, I need to call Kristen and tell her I can't do this. I need to call Kristen and tell her I cannot do this. Because the last time Kristen saw me was in February when I came down here to have my anniversary. And things changed since then. You know, dramatically, but I am here because my sponsor would not allow me to quit. He wouldn't allow that last little secret to go to the grave with me. For some reason, he said, you can trust me. And I put all my trust in him that night. Today, I texted him and I said, said, that's your fear, that's your ego. That's everything that's coming up about you feeling like you're going to be judged or people are going to ridicule you. No, we love you, is what he said. And he said, now we'll save a life. So I took you guys on that little roller coaster there, but now let me take you on to what really got me here. You know, I was driving on the freeway with all my kids in the car. I had just gotten off state parole, and I told myself I was gonna go celebrate this one last time. We went to a Mexican restaurant. We started having these top shelf margaritas, right? And mind you, I started feeling tipsy off of like the first couple sips. I knew I should have quit. But then my wife at the time, I was married for 12 years. I have three beautiful kids in that relationship. I'm a father of five beautiful children. We went to her friend's home, and all of a sudden this man started pouring all these shots of Jack Daniels, and my lady at the time was like, hey, you think I should drive? And I was like, no, I got this. I get on the freeway in Chico on I-5 going the wrong way. And my kids are yelling at me at the top of their lungs, you're going the wrong way! I didn't hear any of that until I saw those Christmas lights behind me, right? The officer pulls me over and gets me out of the car and starts giving me a field sobriety test, and all of a sudden, I remember saying something to the officer, and I said to him, is the reason why I'm failing this test is because I have to go pee. And when those handcuffs went around my wrist, can you hold those handcuffs up? When those handcuffs went around my wrist, I hear my kids laughing in the background. I hear my ex-wife going, you son of a... You know, it was just, I was like, whoa, but hey, I got to jail, and I remember I refused to give them a breathalyzer, so they drew blood, and it was all bad. That's one way that I got an introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, all right? The second time was I was in San Francisco at a bar with my friends, and all of a sudden, a bar fight breaks out, and I get caught up in the middle of it. My shirt was ripped off me. I had blood all over me. I had one pant leg on because the guy decided to rip from my pocket all the way down. One shoe on, and I tell my friend, I'm like, drive me home to Novato. So he drives me home. He pulls up in front of a house that looked like mine. I go into the gate, right? I push the gate open, and I close the gate behind me, but there's, you know, my house that I was living at the time had a little side door with a garage, and I open it, and I open the door, and it turned, and I was like, oh, cool. So I go in there, total blackout state, all right? Total blackout state. I go in the garage, and I'm like, damn, this is cool. So there was a mattress on the side of the wall. I pull that mattress down, and I slept on that mattress in the middle of the garage, right? Freezing, shivering, probably woke up to a Doberman Pinscher barking, right? Threw a little square in the door, and then all of a sudden I hear, I'm still trying to wipe my eyes, and I hear, honey, get the gun, there's a black guy in our garage. No lie, man, no lie. This is like real stuff, man. And, I did not know where I was. That garage door swung open, and I see that shotgun aiming at me. And I'll tell you what, when they say spiritual awakening, for me, that was like my spiritual awakening. All right? Because it took every ounce in me to scream, please do not shoot. I do not know how I got in your house. I am an alcoholic and an addict. And then his wife and the dog was still barking, and his wife was going, shoot him! Shoot him! This is my story. This was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys might get humor out of it, but man, this is my story. Because I wish I could bring a comedy meeting to Alcoholics Anonymous because of the things we did. And I'm sure most of us have those stories, right? Waking up next to somebody who probably we wouldn't have woken up next to. My ex-wife got mad at me because I told her that that was a one-night stand. And, you know, man, it is so tragic what we do to ourselves when we're in that state. Numbing stuff. Recently, a family member of mine was killed by a drunk driver a couple weeks ago in Novato. He was 70 years old, rest his soul. And family members are angry. And I remember telling his daughter on the phone the other day something very important. I told her I was that guy. There's no reason why we should be angry at the guy that killed him, because that guy was sick. We don't know what he was going through. We don't know if he just lost a parent, or we don't know these things. When we get behind the wheel of a car, we do not know what the other person is going through, right? So I kind of, in a light, roundabout way, opened the door for them to start forgiving this young man and praying for him, which our book talks about. We pray for those that harm us. Man, it is an honor to be standing here speaking to you guys because this fifth step for me recently has uncovered some truths about myself. And as I stand here trying to save your life, I'm also doing it for me. This is a selfish program. I found myself yesterday going to a detox center where my family owned this detox center, Helen Vine Detox in Marin. I have a sponsee in there that I just started working with, and when he told me he wanted to leave after being there for 15 days, what came out of my mouth next was what I wish somebody would have told me when I was in detox and wanted to leave, and when I was in treatment those 7 times and wanted to leave. What came out of my mouth was, is this as good as it's going to get? Like, do you have a job? Are you going to sleep on your mom's couch? It kind of was left like flabbergasted for a second. I was like, whoa. You know, I made him look at himself for a second. And I said, do you like the way you feel here? Do you like this? What got you here? Because if your last use didn't hurt enough, you're going to continue to do it. I don't know how that came out of my mouth, but it came out of my mouth when I was talking to him. I said, if your last use didn't hurt enough, you're going to do it again. And with me, when I was doing that work with my sponsor, and he was like, dude, everything's going great in your life. He was like, you know, it's time to get real. So I guess that was my way of trying to run from this meeting today. I was not trying to do this because this is built on honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. It's simple. The word simple is in that big book probably about 26 times. The word recovered is in that big book probably about 20 times. I wish my father had an opportunity to be here. I wish my mom had an opportunity to be here. But with the help of the guidance of my sponsor and fellowship and people telling me that I'm a good person and that, I started believing these things while in prison. I lied to everyone on the streets before I got there, telling them, yeah, I graduated high school, and I didn't do any of that. I got my GED in prison. I became a musician in prison. I drank Pruno in prison. So if you guys know what Pruno is, that's alcohol that we make in there. And that just lets you know how much of an alcoholic I was. I came home, started living life, hitting bumps in the road here and there. Just last year, I was at a meeting with my fiance's dad at his house, and he was like, "Man, you know, you need a job." And I was like, "Damn." What he said to me was, "We're tired of supporting you all this time." And, you know, that right there, man, was an ego buster for me. Because in that moment, I was so angry at him for telling me I needed a job. And then I started thinking about, like, I was like, "Well, do you know how hard it was for me? Like, I didn't have what you had. We didn't even have a table to eat off of. Like, we didn't have a chimney for Santa to come down." Like, you know, like, when he told me that, I went home and I remember praying and I said, "Whatever you have, reveal it." Simple as that. I woke up at 3:30 in the morning to a vision of a stop sign. And it kept coming at me in this dream. And I was like, "Whoa, that's weird." I went back to sleep and I see that stop sign coming at me again. And then all of a sudden, I went to go pee, and I closed my eyes again, and I see the same stop sign. And then I see the word acronym go. So I wrote out four acronyms for the word stop. And then when my fiance woke up, I said, "If you had a nonprofit, what would you name it?" Using these four. And she circled the same one. Today, I'm the founder of a nonprofit called Surviving the Odds Project. Video production, music therapy for at-risk youth. I'm a musician who just released his second album just yesterday. These are the promises. And if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through, it says. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We're going to comprehend the word serenity and we're going to know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we're going to see how our experiences benefit others. A feeling of uselessness and self-pity would slip away. Dude, all these things started happening in my life, right? Intuitively knowing how to handle situations which used to baffle us, like, whoa, someone was in the bathroom just now, or I was waiting in line before I shared here tonight, and two gentlemen. Me and I was waiting with another gentleman to go to the restroom, and two gentlemen just jumped right in front of us and went in. And I said to the gentleman I was standing with, I said, "Dude, if that was the old me, like, I would have just grabbed them and took them back out. Like, hey, hold on. Like, wait your turn." But that didn't come out. What happened was I paused when agitated. And the book talks about that. An intuitive thought came to me in that moment. Right? The old me was so far away in that moment. And what I want to tell the newcomers right now today is that once we take this vital step, the fifth step here, something happens. I don't know what it is, I can't put my finger on it, but something happens. What I can say is just let it out. Trust the process. Know that your life is going to get better. The promises will be revealed. You will not have to walk around with shame. We are all in this together. This morning before I got on the freeway to drive here with my fiance, I went to my weekend warrior meeting. It's a meeting with about 150 guys, 200 guys every Saturday. And I will tell you, when I walked in that room, when I walked in there for the very first time around a bunch of men that were different than me, nothing but the best for me, that told me that they loved me, they hugged me, and they told me that all those dreams you're having right now, all those dreams you want to happen for yourself, we're going to make all that happen. And I wish my dad would have told me that. I'm one of 12 kids. I'm the only sober kid in my family. All this good stuff is happening because of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. I've watched my friends kill themselves to this disease. I have friends in the fellowship that are dying from cirrhosis of the liver, kidney failure. My father died from this disease. I'm just a vessel passing through to share the message of recovery and what it's doing to me right now. Because no matter what, when we fall, we get back up. It's about courage. And it's about taking charge of our lives. And when we look at this chapter 6 in the big book, into action, the very first thing in this chapter says, let me go back. Go back to chapter 5. I was so angry. And it says, if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. After we make this list, we turn back to it, for it held the key to our future, is what it's saying. Make this inventory, it's telling you that that's the key to your future. And it's telling us after we share this fifth step with our sponsor, after we leave, we go back and see if we've omitted everything. And that's what happened. It's as simple as that for me. I'm just so grateful to be here right now. This was worth the drive. It's saving my life. It's saving my life. Just the other day, I'll share this last little thing. One of my friends in the fellowship is dying, and I'll share this last quick thing. I went to visit her in the hospital. Condition is getting worse. Kidney failure, cirrhosis, and for some reason I asked her if I could shoot a clip of one of my music videos in her room with her, but leave her out of it. And so she agreed, right? So all of a sudden I stripped my jacket off and I stripped my pants off, and underneath I had a prison jumpsuit, orange prison jumpsuit, and I'm shackled. And I tried to bring light to the moment from when she was in there. And when I heard her laugh, it was the most genuine laughter ever. And when I saw her message on Facebook about how her being in her darkest moment, how when I passed through and did that sweet little gesture for her, what it did to her. This is a woman whose husband is racist, and he called the phone while I was in the room, and she said, can you get the phone for me? And I picked the phone up and I said, hello, and he's like, who's this? And I handed her the phone, and he says, who was that? And she said, that's my friend. What she wanted to say to him was, he's African American, but she couldn't. And so when she hung up the phone, we laughed about it. And I just want you guys to know, these are genuine relationships that I find in these rooms. It doesn't matter about color, I don't see color. What I see is love, and I see what this big book talks about, love and tolerance, that is our code. It's as simple as that. I mean, I'm blessed to be here. I love you all, and if I could come back and do this again, I would. But I don't have another relapse in me.
Just charging up your hand.